Welcome to China Focus. I'm Sarah Williams. Jim Stevenson is off this week. Hong Kong officials hold talks with protesters. APEC finance ministers meet in Beijing. China works to monitor the possible Ebola threat in the country. Our roundtable looks at the Communist Party's fourth plenum. And American musician Kenny G runs into a storm of controversy in Hong Kong. Hello and welcome to China Focus. Let's look at some of the biggest news stories this week. A U.S. non-governmental organization accused of instigating Hong Kong's pro-democracy street protests says its cooperation with civic groups in the Chinese territory is normal and legitimate. Chinese state media and pro-Beijing news outlets in Hong Kong have published a series of articles in recent days accusing the National Endowment for Democracy of funding and advising the protesters, who have occupied major Hong Kong streets since September 28th. Those media also have portrayed NED as an agent of U.S. foreign policy. Hong Kong Chief Executive Leung Chun-ying added his voice to the foreign interference allegations this week. In a report published Wednesday, the South China Morning Post quotes Leung as saying he will disclose evidence at the appropriate time. In an exclusive interview with VOA, NED's Vice President of Programs for Asia, the Middle East, and North Africa, Louisa Grieva, dismissed the accusations as an insult to Hong Kong people, whom she said have their own desires for democracy.
The American government and American foreign policy is a separate question from what NED does. You know, it's an independent organization. It has a dedicated budget, which is paid for by the American taxpayers, but the decision-making is not part of American foreign policy. Decision-making is based on our dedicated mission of supporting Democrats with their projects that they put forward that they want to work on to advance democracy, human rights, worker rights in their own home society. So there's no U.S. interference in this case. It's a matter of cooperation among civil society organizations for common goals.
NED says it provides more than 1,000 grants a year to other non-governmental organizations or NGOs around the world, three of them in Hong Kong. Meanwhile, student protest leaders intend to hold a vote Sunday to determine demonstrators' support for government reform proposals offered at talks earlier this week. A coalition of protest groups says the vote will occur at the main protest site, where demonstrations are entering their fifth week. Protest leaders had rejected the proposals as insufficient, but many now say a referendum is needed to obtain a more definitive assessment from the people. Ivan Broadhead reports at the initial talks on Tuesday, the government made few concessions.
Five members of the Hong Kong Federation of Students faced five members of the Hong Kong government over a conference table Tuesday evening. In a two-hour dialogue, dense with legal arguments, the delegates, led by Alex Chow for the Hong Kong Federation of Students and Carrie Lam, Chief Secretary for Administration, remained civil throughout. In the opening exchanges, Lam ceded no ground. She clarified her position to reporters after the talks.
As far as their position is concerned, I'm afraid that we can only agree to disagree. Our firm position is the selection of a chief executive by universal suffrage in 2017 has to be done in accordance with legal framework laid down by the National People's Congress on the 31st of August.
The talks, which took place at the Hong Kong Institute of Medicine, far from the occupied zones of the Mong Kok neighbourhood and the central business district, provided few concrete concessions and even less sense of what comes next. Lam did, however, propose gathering cross-community views on further constitutional reform for elections after 2020. The government also raised the possibility of filing a new report to the central authorities on public views regarding constitutional reform. This suggestion comes after a previous submission, believed to be the basis for Beijing's August decision, was widely condemned for lacking objectivity. Chow, a 24-year-old literature student, expressed skepticism about both proposals. He hinted that protesters will remain on the streets.
But whether they have a concrete impact, it is still a question. The government, they need to further explain it in front of the public. Whether this solution could settle the current constitutional problem, well, we still need further observation. It is kind of vague.
Ivan Broadhead for VOA News, Hong Kong.
This is China Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, China fights the Ebola threat. APEC finance ministers met this week in Beijing, seeking areas of cooperation amidst a slowing Chinese economy. Shannon Van Sant reports from the Chinese capital.
After decades of rapid economic growth, China's economy is slowing down. This was top of the agenda for APEC finance ministers who met this week in Beijing. At the close of their meeting, China's finance minister, Lo Jiwei, says Asia will have to lead a global economic recovery. He said the Asia-Pacific region is a locomotive of global economic growth. He said that all of the finance ministers agreed to implement economic policies that support growth and creation of jobs and are committed to structural reforms that will correct the weakness of current economic development. Those structural reforms are changes China's leaders have promised in this new, more measured chapter of the country's economic growth. China's gross domestic product increased by 7.3% in the third quarter. While that rate still makes China the fastest growing economy in the world, it is the slowest growth China has had since the economic crisis of 2009. Lo said increased trade and investment in infrastructure projects will be key to keeping Asian economies afloat. This week's meeting is a prelude to an APEC summit on November 10th and 11th, when leaders of the 21 APEC countries and U.S. President Barack Obama will convene in Beijing. Shannon Van Sant for VOA News, Beijing.
This is China Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, a discovery that could lead to a new way of fighting cancer. China has broken its silence about suspected cases of Ebola in the country, reporting that 43 people in the southern province of Guangdong recently tested negative for the virus. VOA Beijing correspondent Bill Ide says Chinese media reports say the country is boosting measures to prevent the deadly disease from reaching its shores.
A short report released late Tuesday night from Xinhua had few details, but the numbers it divulged were surprising. According to Xinhua, some 8,600 individuals have traveled to Guangdong from Ebola-hit areas in West Africa since late August. And of that number, more than 5,400 have been released from medical supervision. The report gave no details about the rest of the travelers, and it did not clearly say what it meant by medical supervision or specify which countries the travelers were from. The Canton Fair, China's largest trade exhibition, opened last week in Guangzhou and runs through early November. Chinese media reports say screening at the fair has been stepped up with temperature testing facilities. Reports also say that those attending the fair from Ebola-hit areas in West Africa have been asked to stay in designated hotels where their temperature is monitored. At major international airports in China, special screening lines for travelers from West Africa have also been set up. Adams Badomo, a professor of African studies at the University of Vienna, says when he arrived in China recently in Beijing, he had to go through the special line because he carries a Ghana passport. Badomo later traveled to Guangzhou from Hong Kong by train. At Guangzhou East Station, he says there was also a special line set up for individuals carrying West African passports.
Because Guangzhou has the largest community of Africans in the country in China, the thinking is that if this virus is to come into the country at all, it will most likely be through Guangzhou.
Bill Ide, VOA News, Beijing.
A group of Chinese scientists says it has discovered and is testing a virus that could be used to kill cancer cells without harming normal ones. Chinese state media say the virus, known as M1, was extracted from a certain kind of mosquito found in the southern province of Henan. The virus has been used to prevent growth in cancer cells of the liver, bladder, colon, and rectum. So far, it has only been tested on mice. The team that discovered the virus is led by Yang Guangmei with the Jiangshan School of Medicine at Sun Yat-sen University. Yan has told reporters he believes the research could represent a breakthrough in cancer treatment, adding his team hopes to begin clinical trials within 3 years. Michael Woodhead, a Sydney-based medical researcher and author who focuses on China, tells VOA via Skype the research is being done by a reputable group at a good university.
It's a very novel and a very interesting approach to treating cancer, but it's in the very early stages, very exploratory stages so far. There's been hardly any research published on this virus, about 6 or 7 papers in total, which is, in scientific terms, it's very little indeed.
Woodhead says it could be years, if not decades, before the approach is used in clinical practice, if it ever even gets to that stage. This is China Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, musician Kenny G hits a sour note in Hong Kong. The Chinese Communist Party held its fourth plenum this week. Party leaders approved a plan to boost rule of law, which highlights the need to abide by the country's constitution, according to a communique released at the end of top-level meetings this week. The party also approved the expulsion of several high-ranking officials during the meetings. However, the list of officials did not include former National Security Chief Zhou Yongkang, who was widely expected to be expelled at the conclusion of the talks. Joining me to discuss the annual meeting are Robert Daly, director of the Kissinger Institute on China and the United States at the Wilson School, and Fei-Ling Wang, professor of international affairs at the Georgia Institute of Technology. I began the discussion by asking Professor Wang about the issues under consideration.
So far, the kind of early reports or leaks, if you will, have shown that the meeting probably will be discussing some administrative matters, like how to deal with the corrupt officials that have been caught over the past year or two, including some, you know, big tigers. But more importantly, it is reported that the meeting will be discussing issues involving rule by law, in other words, how to enhance the Chinese legal system and using the Chinese legal system to facilitate or strengthen the leadership of the party. In Chinese language, is referred to as yifa zhiguo, meaning using the law to govern the country. It's pretty close to the English concept of rule by law, but oftentimes has been mistaken as the English concept of rule of law, which obviously is very different from rule by law.
Mr. Daly, looking at some of the legal reforms, what would that mean possibly?
Well, there's been a lot of speculation, as you said, and people, I think, are looking only for incremental progress at best. And I think that Professor Wang has very usefully pointed out that we're talking about an attitude toward law which is very specific to the Chinese context. It is clear that the rule of the party and the unquestioned, really, monopoly on political power of the party remains the bedrock of Chinese governance, and it is in that context that legal reforms will take place. One of the things that people are looking for, perhaps, to come out of this plenum is some judicial reform, in particular, having judges in localities, in the cities, report not to local municipal officials, but report instead to the province and up through vertical channels to Beijing. The concern has been that local judicial authorities have been under the governance of local administrative authorities, and that tended to produce more corruption and less judicial independence. So you'll hear talk of judicial independence. Now, that doesn't mean an independent judiciary in the sense that we think of it in America. It means local judges who can make decisions in accordance with the laws of the Communist Party, reporting up the chain to the Communist Party as opposed to reporting to local party members.
But Mr. Daly, wouldn't that mean that, in a way, Beijing becomes even more powerful?
Yes, it would. But there's a strong sense, really throughout China, I don't know if Professor Wang, if you would agree, that you are more likely to get true justice if Beijing is powerful than if local officials are powerful. It's one of the differences between Chinese and American political culture is that we tend to trust federal officials the least and local officials more because they're closest to us. In China, it tends to be the opposite. There's a strong and deep assumption that your local officials are more corrupt, but that in Beijing you are likely to get something like true justice. So a lot of people will petition Beijing, go to Beijing with their grievances that they couldn't get answered at the local level. So I think that within China, if Beijing had a stronger influence than local authorities over local judges, most people would regard that as progress.
Professor Wang?
Yeah, I agree to that largely, and I want to point out two things regarding this vertical legal reform, if you will. One is that this is a clear indication that the top leadership, the CCP, wants to use an additional tool to enhance its control of the increasingly unruly local bureaucrats or officials, to keep them in line and to make sure they are following orders from Beijing. So this is a kind of a way to enhance the power in Beijing, to re-centralize our authorities, to use this system, legal system, to make sure local officials will stay in line. And the second point I want to point out is that, as Ms. Daly very nicely pointed out, many Chinese do believe, contrary to Americans, they do believe that the central government in Beijing is somehow more fair and more merciful and more just. In other words, the top leaders are not necessarily entangled in local interests and not as corrupt as local officials. And this, by the way, is a long historical tradition from imperial time. The emperors are usually good. Usually the local officials are bad. By and large, though, this belief is still there, clearly so. And this plays into the current talk about re-centralizing legal control in the country. But scholars have repeatedly found out this belief is at the best kind of unsubstantiated, at the worst kind of misplaced kind of faith. Because there's no telling that the central government will necessarily put people's interests ahead of the government interest, even in local disputes. But the faith is still there. The belief is still there.
I know another likely topic of discussion, certainly consideration, would be the fate of ex-security czar Zhou Yongkang. Mr. Daly, do you think that that will be likely to be brought up, or will that be decided at some other time?
In all likelihood, it has already been decided, and this will simply move him closer toward whatever his eventual fate is going to be. This is opaque. The process is not one that's available to the public, and they know, furthermore, Xi Jinping knows that Chinese people are intensely interested in what becomes of Zhou Yongkang. The party does not want the people to see process. They will simply announce what decisions have been made and move on.
I agree, and I think similar announcements probably will also be made regarding other senior officials that have been dismissed over the year, some members of the Central Committee, at least the four of them. So therefore, you probably will hear one line or one paragraph announcement come out of the plenum, sort of to legalize or finalize the decisions that have already been made.
This meeting is going on as the Hong Kong protests continue. What kind of impact do you think that the Hong Kong demonstrations have had on the senior Chinese leadership? Professor Wang.
I think the impact by the Hong Kong demonstrators on the senior leadership in Beijing is probably going to be unpronounced. In other words, we probably will not hear much in terms of a response to it. Maybe a casual mentioning like, oh, the central government will continue its old policy, will never yield to any demands by the protesters. But unlikely the students in Hong Kong are changing their minds in Beijing, not much at all.
And how do you feel about this, Mr. Daly, though? Because the Hong Kong students, and just the, not just the students, but the protesters in general, have certainly received a tremendous amount of international publicity.
Yes, but I agree with Professor Wang that this will be part of the background noise against which the attendance at the plenum will work. But this yearly annual meeting of the Communist Party has its own dynamic and its own energy and its own agenda that is set and would continue in this case really quite separately from the Hong Kong meeting. This is not a group that is going to deliberate about that. I think there is strong consensus within Beijing that the party, the government, has spoken and is not going to change. So that is not going to be a major issue here at the plenum itself. It's a separate issue, I think, from the point of view of the party.
Looking as we go into this, Professor Wang, there has been some speculation that President Xi has more power than his immediate predecessors Hu Jintao and Jiang Zemin. Do you agree with that?
I agree to some extent, and I think that Xi Jinping is at least trying and is also making lots of progresses in that direction, that is to be a powerful leader, more powerful than Hu Jintao or Jiang Zemin, and probably will be as powerful as Deng Xiaoping, and even hopefully be as powerful as Mao Zedong. That seems to be the case so far, and there are evidence that suggests that he is making progress. He's getting there. But we are still waiting to see whether his effort will be truly successful. And there are some indications. To some people, it's troubling. To some people, it's encouraging that Xi Jinping is behaving like a Deng-like or Mao-like leader rather than Jiang Zemin-like or Hu Jintao-like leader, in the sense that he's now developing some kind of early stage of personality cult, and he's developing rather comprehensive control of the party apparatus, the propaganda apparatus, and the military leadership. And he's also developing his, quote, personal direct style of leadership. So there are signs to suggest that, but we have to wait and see.
Mr. Daly, you know, Mr. Xi has been perceived, and I have read that as well, that there are some signs of a sort of personality cult growing. Wouldn't that, though, concern many Chinese, looking what happened under Mao and under the Cultural Revolution?
I would argue that the cult of personality tendency is even further advanced, and it took a big leap forward last week when he gave a talk to artists, entertainers, cultural figures in Beijing, in a talk that was very self-consciously reminiscent of talks on culture that Mao Zedong gave at Yan'an. And what this is about is taking on Mao's mantle. It is a long tradition in China that the emperor or the ruler, that part of that person's responsibility and part of the capacity that gives them the right to rule is that they are the defender of the culture. And so we had this with Mao Zedong. It wasn't enough for him to be this great military guerrilla strategist. He also had to be seen as a great poet and calligrapher and guardian of the culture. We didn't see this with Hu Jintao, but now we do see it with Xi Jinping, who is saying that artists have to serve socialism, they need to promote good work styles. He's even criticized the kinds of architecture that he doesn't like in Beijing. Now, there's no reason from Xi Jinping's background. Well, I think that he's a very bright man and a very able politician. There's no reason to think he knows anything about culture or architecture or poetry or anything else. But this can't be said. So more and more he is, yes, taking on this cult of personality.
Robert Daly, director of the Kissinger Institute on China and the United States at the Wilson School, and Fei-Ling Wang, professor of international affairs at the Georgia Institute of Technology. U.S. jazz musician Kenny G has a special place in China, where his song Going Home lives on as the theme to, well, crowds going home. From shops to schools, the four-minute solo is a mega hit in the country. So when the saxophonist posted a photo of himself to Twitter on Wednesday at a pro-democracy demonstration in Hong Kong, where protesters are lobbying for less political influence from Beijing in selecting the territory's leadership, the irony of Kenny G's presence was not lost on reform supporters. In the photo, Kenny G, whose full name is Kenneth Gorlick, held two fingers up in a V peace sign as he stood in front of a protest banner that reads in part, "Democracy of Hong Kong by Hong Kong." But in a later statement, Kenny G distanced himself from the protest movement, saying he doesn't really know anything about the situation, and insisted his impromptu visit to the site was just part of an innocent walk around Hong Kong. The musician, who's performing a concert this week in the southern Chinese province of Henan, said via the statement on his Facebook page that he only meant to share his wish for peace for Hong Kong and for all of China. He also removed the photos from his Twitter page. The irony was not lost on demonstrators. Pro-democracy group Global Solidarity HK shared the musician's photo with its more than 3,600 followers on Twitter, adding the comment, "Going home? Not without civil nomination." Following his Facebook statement, many protesters expressed disappointment. One pro-democracy lawmaker, Charles Mock, said on Twitter that the singer was being used by the Communist Party and suggested he does not deserve to be a citizen of a free country like the U.S. China's foreign ministry spokeswoman Hua Chunying said that while Kenny G's music is widely popular in China, China's position on the illegal Occupy Central activities in Hong Kong is very clear. We'd like to hear from you. Email us at voaasia@voanews.com and follow us on Facebook and Twitter and look at our program page, voanews.com/ChinaFocus.